mankind's greatest power. If you were asked, what is the greatest power that human beings possess? What would you say that would be? Now, no doubt if people were of a religious bent, they might say, well, that would be the power of prayer or God. Well, that's power that we have access to, but of course, God is outside ourselves. I'm just talking about just within ourselves, what human beings possess in and of themselves. What would the greatest power be? Well, if you look at it from that standpoint, some people might say, well, our intelligence, that's the greatest power that we possess. Atomic energy, some people might say, that's the greatest power we have. Well, that's arguable, of course. As a matter of fact, the answer to this question is really debatable. I will grant you that. You could give a different answer to this question than I give, and who's to say who's correct? I acknowledge that. But let me submit to you, and maybe you will agree, that even if you don't think this is the greatest power that people have, certainly it is a very great power that they have, and that is the power of self-deception. And that's what I want to study with you about from the scriptures today. Self-deception. It's a great power that we have. People getting deceived and even deceiving themselves. And my emphasis today, even though I'm going to be talking about deception in general, my emphasis today is upon the power of self-deception. Just a couple of days ago, I was just looking over a book, and on the first page, it had a quote from Mark Twain, the beloved American author. And Mark Twain supposedly said, "The most outrageous lies that can be invented will find believers if a man only tells them with all his might." In other words, if he looks sincere, if he's zealous, then people more readily believe him. And if his zeal is shown in his passion, then people will readily believe him, because we find it hard to believe, and this is where it gets into self-deception, we find it hard to believe that someone could be so passionately telling what he believes and it not be the truth. Another quote, this one from, I guess he would have been from classical Greece, Demosthenes. But in any event, it goes this way. "The easiest thing of all is to deceive one's self. For what a man wishes, he generally believes to be true." I think you can see this from just life in general. Look at how many differences and shades of political opinion there are. Generally, in presidential elections, about half the electorate will go with the Democratic candidate and half the electorate will go with the Republican candidate. And what do the losers say about the winners? Oh, they deceive themselves, and vice versa. And even when it comes to international conflicts, people say, well, all of those people in that nation are deceived. So we readily believe that, and must admit that people can deceive themselves, or we think that they can deceive themselves on a large scale. And that really is what I'm trying to say this morning. That we have this great power within ourselves to deceive ourselves. Well, what makes people think that we're capable of deceiving ourselves? Well, for one thing, we are so awed by human accomplishment and what we have achieved in the modern or industrial age. We've even put human beings on the surface of the moon, that we have practically deified humanity. We have accomplished so many things that we can hardly believe that we could have any sort of self-imposed ignorance, that we're always making progress, that we're always getting smarter and more knowledgeable. And under those circumstances, how could we believe that we could deceive ourselves? Now, while this may be true in the natural sciences, it is very human in the ideological, philosophical, moral, and religious realms for people to deceive themselves. And the reason they're able to do that is because in those realms, they don't get feedback, not necessarily immediate feedback, anyway, that tells them that they're necessarily wrong. The reason we cannot so easily deceive ourselves in the physical realm or in the natural realm is because we often get physical, even painful feedback, which will not allow self-deception. We cannot deceive ourselves, for instance, into believing that fire is cold. If we think that, then we can put our finger into a flame and we will be told immediately, well, no, it's not cold. So it's just the nature of the case that in the natural realm and the physical realm, it is not as easy to be deceived, although that is possible, I will say that, especially when science is used to support a philosophical or ideological viewpoint. But there are a couple of outstanding reasons why self-deception in the religious or ideological realm is not so easily avoided. And the first of these is that in the religious or ideological realm, the feedback which allows one to know he is in error is not immediate. For instance, those who are anti-communist, at least, would recognize this, but it took roughly around 70 to 75 years to figure out about the time the Soviet Union fell, roughly around 1990 or so, that first communist nation came apart, that communism doesn't work. That from about 1917, when you had the Russian Revolution and communism was institutionalized as the form of government there in the Soviet Union, until roughly about 1970 to 75 years, it took them that long to figure out. And I'm sure that there would be some socialists who would disagree with me about this. I would submit to you that the fall of the Soviet Union and the hardships that they endured during that time shows that as an economic system, socialism, communism didn't work very well. My point simply is that this illustrates the fact that communism is an ideology. And it took that long to see from a practical standpoint that it doesn't work. So the feedback was not immediate. But there is a second reason why people can be so self-deceived in the religious or ideological realm, and that is, similarly, the cause-effect relationship between the problem and its philosophical source is not always obvious. Now, you can see that sometimes in, use a classic example, child-rearing. People have different philosophies about child-rearing. Problem is, you may think your philosophy will be just fine. It will work great when your children are, you know, just little tots. But then when they get to be in their 20s and 30s and maybe beyond that, and they have turned out to be not what you wanted them to be, well, sometimes people have difficulty recognizing that the way I raised my children is the way they are now. That accounts for that problem. They would perhaps want to attribute it to something else, some other influence. It's hard to make that connection between the cause, in this particular case, the way parents raise their children, and what the children come to be as adults. It's hard for parents, perhaps, to accept that blame. I mean, how many parents do you hear say, I was wrong. I just had the wrong child-rearing philosophy. I didn't discipline my children, or whatever it is that they may think might have been the cause. Parents, I imagine, would have a hard time recognizing, saying, I did a bad job as a parent. I was not a good father. I was not a good mother. How often do you hear people saying things like that? Why can they get away with something like that? Because it's hard to make that cause-effect connection. Before considering any further the power of people to deceive themselves, perhaps it's worth observing, this may sound a little bit ironic and contrary to what I'm saying in this lesson, that power can be put to use in very beneficial and important ways. For instance, for their psychological welfare, people will effectively push troublesome, painful, or debilitating knowledge into their subconscious minds and distract themselves. Have you ever done that? There are some things that I remember, maybe mistakes that I've made in my past, that are so troubling to me, I consciously put them out of my mind. It is simply too stressful to contemplate them. So I will shift my thinking to something else. When that comes into my mind, I will push it out. So that's not necessarily bad because I've already recognized that I made that mistake. I just don't want to dwell on it. Now, there is a set of, defenses we have against that sort of thing that, as a matter of fact, psychologists call defense mechanisms. And I've seen about 10 different defense mechanisms listed. And they're psychological ways that we use to defend ourselves, our minds, our psyches, from things that are troubling to us. Two that you would probably be most familiar with, one in particular would be denial. You've heard the expression, he's in denial. If we cannot accept something, we simply deny that we were at fault in the matter. And the other one to which I have referred and which I've applied to myself is called repression. We simply repress or put away thoughts that are too troubling to ourselves. That's repression. If it bothers you too much, then just don't think about it. It's a form of self-deception, you might say, but there are times when something like that can be helpful if it keeps a person from going crazy, perhaps with guilt over things that they can't change now. Another example, one that is very familiar with us, is really enjoying fiction. We all, I suppose, watch television shows or watch movies. You ever read a novel? You're engaging in what is called suspended reality. You suspend reality. The reality is the things in that novel, the characters, they're all made up. Somewhere in the back of your mind, you know, those things really didn't happen. Why are we able to watch war movies? If we do see things like that, why are we able to look at those things with all the blood and the gore? Well, for the most part, we watch and enjoy those things because we suspend reality. We know these people are actors, but we don't think about that too much. If we thought about that too much, we wouldn't be able to enjoy the movie. But we recognize it somewhere in the back of our minds because we're able to watch the blood and the gore, perhaps. Whereas if we were looking at it in real life, we might throw up or something like that. But we engage in suspended reality. We don't think about the fact that, oh, all these characters that I'm watching, they're play acting. It's not reality. We suspend our sense of reality. Now, again, you can see this sort of thing about deceiving ourselves. It's not in all situations altogether bad. It can serve some useful purposes. The problem is that people overuse it and misapply it. So let's observe that people are self-deceived. What does it mean to be self-deceived? Well, of course, self-deception is a willingness or an inclination to allow oneself to believe what is false. However, people see deception as such a terrible, if not evil, act for one person to perpetrate on another. You don't like to be lied against, so you don't like to lie to yourself then, do you? So we have trouble then believing that we would practice self-deception, that we would do that to ourselves. In the first place, people generally think of lying as being quite permissible, if not good, in many instances. And I've been told that, I guess this depends on how you would define lying, but everybody lies. At least that's what some people say. I hope that's not the case. I hope Christians wouldn't engage in lying, but maybe they give a very broad definition to lying. And therefore, it should not be surprising that people would lie to themselves for the same reasons, that is, in order to make themselves feel good. Another important consideration is that self-deception, by its very nature, is not easily exposed or acknowledged. This is another way of saying that people deceive themselves into not believing that they so easily and so often deceive themselves. And hence, the unwillingness to acknowledge the power of self-deception really is an instance or verification of the power of the human mind to refuse to be aware of what it does not wish to know. We've probably all said or heard others say, at least, well, I don't want to know that. I didn't hear that. Aren't there some things we simply don't want to know? So we don't ask questions if we don't want to know? The point I'm trying to make is, if you stop and think about it, self-deception is not such a rare thing, to say the least. And it's understandable how people then could engage in self-deception. Though people may not wish to fathom the depth of human power for self-deception, the Bible repeatedly alludes to it. There really is more of a fine line between deception and self-deception than we might have thought. Satan's power to get people to sin essentially lies in his ability to deceive them. In John 8, verse 44, he is called a liar and the father of lies. In Revelation 12, verse 9, it is said that he deceives the whole world. He's rather powerful. And in 2 Corinthians 11, verses 13 through 15, we have there a reference to how he deceives people and how powerful and effective he can be in deceiving people. Let me start with 2 Corinthians 11, verse 13. For such men are false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it is not surprising if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their deeds. Satan is very effective in deceiving people. He can disguise himself as an angel of light. His servants are disguised as servants of righteousness. They wouldn't do that if they could not be effective in doing that. This is the connection between deception perpetrated by Satan and his servants and our self-deception. Satan could not be so effective in deceiving us if we did not allow it, if we did not want to be deceived. And hence the connection again between deception and self-deception. So Satan must enlist our cooperation in order to get us to sin. He cannot force us to sin. He's not allowed to do that. So from that standpoint, it might be said that sin involves self-deception, or the sin which comes from Satan's deception involves our self-deception, since sin, by definition, is something people willingly do. God is not going to allow us to be capable of sinning against our will. We have free will. We choose to sin when we sin. So Satan's task then is simply to get people willing to be deceived. And that comes pretty close to self-deception. So let's look at the first sin. The very first sin involved self-deception on Eve's part. Now, it says in 1 Timothy 2, verse 14, that Adam was not deceived, but the woman, Eve, being quite deceived, fell into transgression. Yes, Satan deceived her, but on some level, she allowed herself to be deceived. She was self-deceived, that is. So Eve had to let herself be deceived. Her deception was due to a decision to believe Satan rather than God. Now, Adam was not deceived, it says in 1 Timothy 2, verse 14. Probably on some point he was deceived, because God had told him in Genesis, the second chapter, don't eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, but if you do, in that day, you'll surely die. On that point, I would submit to you that Adam probably didn't believe God or wouldn't have eaten that fruit. That would have been suicide on his part. But going back to 1 Timothy 2, verse 14, it says he was not deceived. There was some point on which he was certainly not deceived, and on that point, Eve, his wife, was deceived. What was that? Well, it was in the benefits that Satan said that this fruit would give. Adam ate that fruit, evidently not thinking that it was really going to give the benefits that Satan had promised. He was not deceived about this. Why'd he do it? Well, the best thought is that perhaps he wanted to please his wife. He was under pressure from his wife, so he ate the fruit in violation of God's commandment. Eve, however, was deceived about the benefits she would derive, as told to her by Satan, from eating that forbidden fruit. On that point, she was deceived, whereas her husband was not. Well, on some level, she deceived herself. in the sense that she allowed herself to believe that what Satan had told her was true, what God had said was false. Throughout the Bible, there are repeated warnings and references about being deceived and deceiving oneself. As a matter of fact, the New Testament so often uses the expression, do not be deceived, or something like that, that it almost becomes a formula. Again and again and again, you'll see that statement. Let me just pick out a representative one. In 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter, verse 33, the Apostle Paul begins the statement by saying, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. Now, that expression, do not be deceived, is a warning flag to alert a person in a very emphatic way to the idea that here is a place in which people particularly are especially susceptible to deception. You think you can associate yourself with bad people and their influence not rub off on you? That's not going to be the way it is. Don't be deceived. Now, again and again and again, that sort of statement is made in the New Testament. There are also many references and warnings about people deceiving themselves. While we're in 1 Corinthians here, let's just look at the first one, 1 Corinthians 3, verse 18. There it says, let no man deceive himself. Since the lesson's on self-deception particularly, I will take the time to read these passages about self-deception. Galatians 6, verse 3. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. James 1, verses 22 and 26. We find there that it says, but prove yourselves doers of the word, and not merely hearers who delude themselves. And dropping down to verse 26, we observe that it says, if anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. Oh, deceives his own heart? Yes, that's possible. Finally, 1 John 1, verse 8. We find there that it says, if we say that we have no sin, we are deceiving ourselves, and the truth is not in us. So there you have it. At least these several scriptures, which refer to people deceiving themselves. We not only see this possibility in everyday life, in our experiences, but the Bible testifies not only to its possibility, but to the idea that it's a very great reality in human life. Biblical characters sometimes refuse to believe despite evidence so overwhelming that the only way to account for their disbelief is to say they preferred deception. They preferred not to believe. How could the Israelites have beheld all of God's miracles in Egypt and the wilderness and still not have trusted in His power? How could they observe what he did through his prophet Elijah on Mount Carmel as recorded in 1 Kings, the 18th chapter, and still not have been faithful to him? How could the Jews have witnessed the many miracles of Christ and his apostles and still have persisted in their disbelief? Well, the answer is relatively simple. They chose not to believe. They preferred to be deceived. So that Jesus said in John 7, verse 17, if anyone is willing to know his will, paraphrasing, he'll know the truth. But that's the key. You've got to be willing to know his will. You've got to love the truth, even if it brings pain sometimes. You've got to love the truth and be willing to believe it. 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 8 through 12. Also, it can be concluded from the fact that so few will be saved, according to Matthew 7, verses 13 and 14, that the vast majority of people are lost in self-deception. This is simply another way of asserting that if people are lost, they're lost by their own fault. To conclude otherwise, of course, would impugn the justice of God. And thus, if people do not come to know the truth which can save them, it is because they choose not to recognize it. This, then, is simply another way of saying that people deceive themselves. Of course, it might be asked why people would want to deceive themselves or be self-deceived. Why would they want to do something that is contrary to their own best interest? Let me mention a few reasons in bringing this lesson to a close. To express it very simply, although it may be hard to believe, it's obvious that people want to be deceived, which is another way of saying they prefer to believe what is untrue. Scripture even depicts listeners as asking prophets to deceive them in Isaiah 30, verse 10, as if they were actually speaking their own minds. Actually, the prophet is expressing what is really in their hearts. Isaiah 30, verse 10. There it says, "Who say to the seers, 'You must not see visions,' and to the prophets, 'You must not prophesy to us what is right. Speak to us pleasant words. Prophesy illusions.'" Now, Isaiah here is not really quoting them. It's hard to believe that people would say to the prophets, "Don't tell us what's right. Give us illusions." Instead, evidently what Isaiah is doing is revealing what is really in their hearts, even though the speakers themselves may not be conscious of that. Prophesy illusions? Deceive us. Why would they feel that way? What Isaiah is saying here is what I'm trying to say, which is the heart of the lesson today. People want to believe. That is to say, they would prefer to believe what is false if the truth is too painful for them. People actually have a burning affinity for falsehood. In 2 Timothy 2, verses 2 through 4, Paul, writing to Timothy here, of course, emphasizes that fact. Beginning with verse 2, he tells Timothy, "Preach the word, be ready in season and out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with great patience and instruction. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate to themselves teachers in accordance to their own desires." That's what I'm saying. People want to be deceived. Why? Because the truth is too painful. The truth will make them do things they don't want to do. So how do they cope with that? Just don't believe it. And that takes care of the problem for them. I actually didn't finish reading verse 4. "And will turn away their ears from the truth and will turn aside to myths." Revelation 22 verse 15 also has an interesting statement to make along these lines when it refers to those outside heaven because they loved and practiced lying. Loved lying? Or loved a lie, I think it is literally. How is that? People do love lies. If for the moment those lies serve their purpose and make them feel good and happy and help them to achieve their goals. Now, if you don't think that that's very real, let me mention one phrase to you. Ever heard the reference to the placebo effect? It's fairly common. A pill may not have any active ingredients, but if a person is told this will help you, often there takes place a placebo effect. That is, they get the effect as if that pill actually had some medicinal value that relieved them of their suffering. But it doesn't in reality. But since they believe that, their mind then works on their body to relieve them of their suffering. But a second reason people would want to be deceived is that self-deception satisfies an intense psychological craving. It allows a person to know the security and comfort of believing that he is saved, whether or not he actually is. And this can be deceiving because self-deception does not necessarily make life easier for a person. As a matter of fact, some forms of self-deception can make life more difficult for people. The Pharisees in the New Testament are described in Luke 18 verses 11 and 12 as fasting twice a week. Now, that seems to be pretty hard to me. Going without food twice a week, every week. So that's an example of how people's self-deception can make life harder for them. But here's the point. They're willing to have a harder life if it gives them the psychological security of thinking, ah, I must be saved. How do I know that? Because I'm putting myself through such hardship. I'm fasting twice a week. I'm tithing of all that I have. Again, I'm alluding to how Jesus described the Pharisee in Luke, the 18th chapter. So don't think that because some people entertain religious beliefs that make life harder for them, that therefore they cannot be deceiving themselves. That's the way they are deceiving themselves. And yet for most people, self-deception probably is a way to experience psychological security without having to do what is required to secure actual spiritual security. Self-deception lets them think they are saved without having to do what it takes to be saved. And what it takes to be saved is more than the average person wants to do, and thus he prefers to deceive himself. If that were not the case, this building would be overflowing today. In conclusion then, let me just sum up by saying, we as human beings generally are so proud of ourselves. Do we like to think that we could be duped? But we are so proud of ourselves and our ability to ferret out any falsehoods that might be presented to us that we cannot bring ourselves to believe that we could be self-deceived about our own salvation. Considering the incentives to self-deception, what it brings to people when they deceive themselves, it's really no wonder that so many people deceive themselves. That's the lesson for today. We can so easily deceive ourselves. In the religious realm, that can have eternal consequences. Let's be more vigilant. And I hope you are vigilant with me. I don't want you to accept what I've said simply because I've said it. And because I'm up here in this pulpit. On a purely theoretical or hypothetical level, I could be lying to you. You need to examine what I have to say in the light of the Scriptures. And only if what I've said is true in the light of the Scriptures should you accept what I say. I hope you found that to be the case today. If there are any here today who need to render obedience to the gospel of Jesus Christ, we hope you'll do that today so that you can leave here with the hope of heaven in your heart. Come forward in faith and in repentance to confess your faith in Jesus Christ as the Son of God before us. And then be immersed in a body of water that the blood of Christ might cleanse you of your sins and usher you into his kingdom. Now, that's not just what I'm saying. That's what the Scriptures teach. I would be happy to show you that if you have doubts about that. But that would be for later. For right now, if you're subject to the gospel in that way, we hope you'll obey it. If you have been baptized into Christ, but since then have turned away from him and perhaps have even brought reproach upon the Lord or his word or his church by the sins you've committed, and you want to let us know that you're sorry for those things and you want to be restored to God and to his people by confession of your sins here before us today, we bid you to come forward and make your needs known as together for your encouragement we now stand and sing.